Hey Fixers, I'm Dr. Jeanette Benegas, one of the co-founders of FixSLP. Our platform exists to discuss the biggest challenges that are currently holding back the field of speech-language pathology. We present the issues with facts and invite you to be a part of joining this movement to make things better one conversation at a time. So let's fix SLP. Hey everybody, welcome back to the State by State series. Today we have Robin Martin from Texas. I just want to start the conversation today by letting you all know that the views stated are not reflective of Robin's personal opinion, but instead representative of the Texas Executive Board as a whole. Thanks for coming today, Robin.
Thanks for having me.
Let's just jump right in. Tell us who you are. Tell us about yourself.
I am a speech-language pathologist. I have worked in a variety of settings. I spent a good chunk of my career in the schools. I've also worked in university settings and education. I'm also a board-certified fluency specialist, so I love all things fluency. I love teaching, working with graduate students, and love the field of speech pathology in general.
What do you do for fun when you're not SLPing?
So I have two young girls. They're 7 and 10. They have lots of activities going on. The family time is fun. I love reading. I love working out. We love doing things outdoors and just hanging out with the family, traveling.
Do you love reading for yourself, or do you just get caught up in reading to your kids?
I love reading for myself.
Okay.
definitely have, you know, the reading time with the kids, but I used to do it a long time ago and then picked it back up recently. I think especially at the beginning of my career, I felt like any extra time I had, I needed to be reading like research articles and, you know, all things speech pathology. And so I figured out fast, like you got to take a break at some point. Back into reading then. And then, you know, once the kids were really young, that was really hard, but I picked it back up this past summer, and it has been a great hobby to pick back up.
All right, Robin, so how did you get involved with your state association? Specifically, like now, what do you love about it?
When I was in graduate school, our professors were really involved, and so they said, "Well, we need volunteers." And so we would go to convention and volunteer. So I really attribute that to the professors who pushed, you know, and said, "This is important for the field." And then as you start volunteering, you make connections and networking. And so you know, somebody asks you to help with this or with that. And it just kind of evolved from there. I was a vice president of educational and scientific affairs. So I had the privilege to help run our convention way back when, and about 10 years ago, and then had just stayed involved volunteering and helping with committees. We started a leadership academy that I got to help with and help chair that for a while. I also got involved with our foundation board, where we give scholarships to students in the state of Texas. So that was really fun to be a part of. And I was president. So this year I'm actually past president. So we serve a year as president-elect, 2 years as president, and then a year as past president on the board.
Okay. It's a long commitment.
It is a long commitment.
you said you started volunteering with your state convention, and I happen to know that they have already had their convention this year. So this is going to be airing after the 2024 convention. But I think that's such a great place for people to start, even if they're not volunteering, but to go, because there's something so much more special and intimate about your state convention, where you can really meet people who are in the state doing the same things as you and having the same struggles and the same wins as you. I have always loved state conventions, and even as a speaker, nothing has made me more proud than when I've spoken at my own state convention, especially the very first time. But I tend to really love our state conventions.
Yeah. It's a great way to get everyone together. We get there a little bit early because we have our executive board meeting before a convention starts. And you know when everyone's arriving because you can just like spot the SLPs. And so I love seeing it in the lobby. I love seeing it at seeing people at restaurants, in the elevator, you know, like just striking up conversations. I just think that it's really neat. And so it's something that, you know, it's been hard since COVID when everything went virtual. And so everybody's just adjusted to being online and getting everything virtually. But there's just something about that in-person connection that I think is still important and special.
Our Ohio convention is coming up, and I'm staying with a friend from grad school who lives maybe 7 minutes from the hotel where we're having the convention. And I'm having second thoughts that maybe I should have gotten a room in the hotel because I'm having FOMO. But I mean, it's saving me hundreds of dollars to not stay there. But yeah, I want to be there because what might happen? What am I going to miss out on? So yeah, I always love state conventions. Okay, so let's talk about the association, the state association itself. We're going to talk previously. In previous years, what is one area of advocacy that your state undertook that made a difference for the clinicians in your state?
I can highlight two big areas because these are two really big things that occurred. One was before a year or two, it was slightly before the pandemic. We had a House representative who filed a bill to get rid of our state license, just meaning that anybody could practice as a speech-language pathologist. So luckily, our lobbyist was following the bills, saw this right away, alerted the executive board. We were able to alert members, SLPs, and audiologists in the state of Texas, and everyone came out in full force. So emailed the person's office, called, contacted on social media to where he had pulled the bill in a matter of time after that. So I think that that was a really big wake-up call because it's like, this is real and this could happen, to where if these things aren't monitored, that could happen. And how would you feel about anybody just treating a family member who had a stroke or a family member who is experiencing, you know, a communication difficulty? So that was a big thing that happened. That representative even came to our convention that year and apologized to us.
Yes.
So yeah, it was big.
I'm glad that you brought this up because I completely forgot to even ask you about it privately. People will post screenshots on our content about when this happened in Texas. And it's used as a scare tactic for people to kind of scare our followers. But I love the response. You know, we haven't gotten the story. And so Megan and I have said is these things aren't going to happen in the dead of night. There's going to be some warning. So it sounds like you got warned pretty quickly and shut it down before it even got anywhere. And you would hope that that is what is happening in every other state as well, that SLPs collectively just make a really loud voice. So if you want something or don't want something in your state, you have to do the things that you did. Like the exec board organized, you got the information out to the people responded appropriately. And that's exactly how advocacy should work, especially for such an important issue. So I'm glad that you brought that up because I don't think people have the whole story. So you guys spoke up, shut it down quick, and then he apologized. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Came to convention and apologized. So that happened. And then when the pandemic happened, so with the shutdown of everything in 2020, we did not have it to where in the state of Texas where clinical fellows and SLP assistants could practice using teletherapy. And so that was a really big push that we got that bill across the governor's desk and got that passed. So we were able to get that and for that to be permanent. So it wasn't just temporary, you know, just for that time being until everything was lifted, but that's permanent. So those are if we talk about past things more in the, you know, more recent years, those are two big things for us.
Significant. I love that. So what is something that Texas is working on right now in terms of advocacy?
Well, we are one of the now fewer states that doesn't have the Interstate Compact bill passed. We have just run into roadblock. We got it out of the House this past legislative session, and then it stopped at the Senate. We've partnered with other associations and are really working hard to have that passed. So I would say that that's one of our biggest pieces that we've been working on. Medicaid rates, you know, are always in the conversation. And so that's being worked on. And so our last legislative session, there were 157 bills that our team monitored and were just kind of keeping us in the loop about and then letting people know if action needed to be taken, including like school vouchers as well. That was another big priority the last session. So lots of things being monitored and then making sure that we get the word out to our members and to audiologists and speech language pathologists to say, hey, we need action, you know, on these things.
In terms of the interstate compact, that's definitely something that comes up a lot when we get comments and emails and questions. Is there anything specific that Texas clinicians can be doing to help push that agenda forward? How can they get involved really specifically to make a difference with that compact?
I can talk about general, first of all, and then it kind of goes in some of the specifics. But we have what's called PAC, which is our Political Action Committee, and they collect donations because we use that whenever we go to lobby. So as we're making connections with representatives or we're trying to make those connections to help us get something across, that money helps towards that. That committee, the PAC committee, definitely could use donations to help with those efforts. I think also the big thing is for people to be talking to their legislators. What are the big issues? How can you educate them about being a speech pathologist? I mean, and just your representatives and who you're going to be voting for, because that's the other thing is voting. And I think that that's something big. I think about, like, with my kids being in the school, like, yes, you have your national government, you have this government at the state level, but then there's also the local and who your representatives are that are representing your region. And that even goes to like your school board and which impacts your school district. And so we vote for those people. And so I think meeting with them, what is important to them. And so I think that right now when we're not currently in a legislative session, but I think that it's important, like, now's the time for people to be having those meetings and discussing these things. Talk about the interstate compact with the representative. How would they vote for this and the importance of it for our profession? So I think that those are the specific things that could be done right now. And then I think also, like, with thinking about the number of people in the state of Texas, if anybody has any connections with anyone. So I know that our advocacy team is always asking for that, and sometimes we need people to testify on certain areas. And so any connections that anybody has, or if you just want to get to know the advocacy team and say, hey, I'm here, let me know, how I can help. I think that that's important as well.
I think if there's one thing I've learned in the last 5 months, it's that the Fearless Fixers have connections. We have been connected with so many people. We've taken so many meetings that we don't even talk about. So as big as the state of Texas is, there has to be Fearless Fixers with connections to help with this. So if you're listening, get with the state association, connect your people to their people. This, because that's a big one. That's an important one. And then writing to your state representatives to let them know that it's important.
Yeah, or even setting up a meeting with them. I think that this can be sometimes intimidating. So, our team will help talk people through this. We've also done visits to the Capitol before. During the legislative session, our convention was in Austin. And so we took time during the convention. A group of us went over and we met with our representatives at the Capitol and talked about the bills that be affecting us. And so I think that, you can set up a meeting anytime with them or even an email as well. But that point of contact is important because you're voting for them or not, when it comes time for election time.
The other thing you said was Medicaid rates. And I always try to remember that not everyone is consuming our content at the rate that I am. So just in case people haven't listened, we did have a podcast episode with someone who was able to get the Medicaid rates up by almost 40% in Ohio. And for people who don't understand, Medicaid rates are set at a state level. It's not a federal program. So those have to be addressed at the state level. And the person that we interviewed, her name is Brianna. Brianna did it without the help of the state association. She touched base about maybe getting some phone numbers here and there, and she was touching in and out and keeping them posted, but they were not actively helping in that process. And so if she was able to do that alone with one or two other colleagues, it took her 4 years to get it done. The association is interested and involved in wanting to do that. So that could speed that process up along a little bit. So if that's something that you're concerned about too, it's doable. It's doable. It's other states are working on it. It's happening. So that's another great way. And she did the same thing. She met with Medicaid. She met with state representatives. You know, she did the work and got it done. And when those rates went up, it wasn't just for speech pathologists. It was for all, I think, allied health professionals. Maybe it was a big group of people where they bumped the rates for everybody. So that was, even though that wasn't part of her agenda, that was a really big impact on the residents in the state of Ohio. So it's doable. So another great way to get involved. Is there anything specific other than, like we just said, contacting state representatives, anything specific for Medicaid issues that people can be doing?
I would say that those are the big pieces.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think also letting, the more that we hear from members of how they're impacted by this, that gives us data to use. And so I think being able to hear from our members of how they're being impacted, that helps us as we are going forth with the efforts.
Yeah. Something that they did in Ohio, which I'm sure you've probably done or have thought about doing, but Medicaid was able to provide them the number of times that our CPT codes were billed in a certain number of years, which they used to talk to the senators and the legislators, and they used that as an access to care issue. Like private practitioners, you know, small businesses aren't able to keep their doors open because you're giving us X amount of dollars, which cannot fund a business, and now we can't take Medicaid because this rate is so low. And so all of these consumers in your state who are relying on Medicaid for their health needs can't get access to care. And I think that was the thing that really did it, was figuring out the rate at which those codes were being billed and how that could change if more people had access to care. That was the point that got it through, I think.
And getting through to that person who has the ability to make that adjustment. Because
yeah.
It's, you know, like it's the key people are to make that change and getting it through, you know, to them.
Yeah. So you've got what you're working on now. And I know typically it sounds like state associations are planning a few years out, or at least starting to gather information or thinking about it. So what is Texas thinking about for the future? What do you anticipate will need to happen to make those things a success? Where are you guys headed?
We have a strategic plan that we complete for 3 years out. And so I will tell you that our big pillars involve education, member engagement and belonging, advocacy, and then just operational excellence overall. So within those four pillars, we set yearly goals. And then with those yearly, the executive board sets those goals and then takes it to each executive board member or vice president has committees. And with those committees, there's chairs. The executive board sets those goals, takes it to their chairs and says, hey, this is the vision of the executive board based on feedback that we've received. Do y'all agree? Is there anything we need to add? Is this what we can work towards? And so we collaborate with the chairs to get their input. And then we approve our goals for the upcoming year. So that's kind of our process. So as far as specific things that we're working on, we have webinars. So we have webinars on Webinar Wednesdays, which are free to Tisha members. And then we have Tisha Tuesday webinars. And this upcoming year, we're going to be offering advanced courses with that. So more with specialty. That's for a discounted rate for Tisha members. And then for our Wednesday webinars, those are free for Tisha members. So offering those webinars, so we want to continue with that and with that programming. We also offer free CE registry. So if you get, you know, attend a session where there's Tisha CEUs involved, you can maintain your registry for free for being a member of Tisha, which is another great benefit. And then our resources, going through our website, we're always updating our resources, but we have things categorized by certain areas of the profession, and there's really great resources that volunteers have put together, you know, to share with members. So we, of course, are always updating that. We have eligibility guidelines. So Tisha created eligibility guidelines to provide to districts to give as a guide if they choose to adopt those. So we have just updated a bunch of those. I'm pretty sure anybody can access the manual for those from our website. But as far as the training that goes along with it, it's free for Tisha members. And then there's a fee if you're not. We just have cultural linguistic diversity one that We're about to roll out. We're updating our fluency guidelines. We also have a group that has been working on swallowing and feeding guidelines in the school. So those are projects that are still in the works. I feel like this is always a goal of just the social media presence and getting out the word of what we're doing. Being a volunteer, I see all the behind the scenes, but it's really hard of how do you connect that with people who aren't behind the scenes, you know, who, I mean, I practice every day too, full-time speech language pathologist with a family who does this as volunteer work, but how do you get that message out? And so that is something that is a part of what we've been working on is that social media presence and letting people know the things we're doing. We're also rolling out this year an advocacy newsletter. So we're trying to get all of our pieces with advocacy. We've always had what's called a Capitol Watch, but that's been very specific to the legislation. And so we're trying to include all things advocacy with this newsletter. So we have plans to get that out this year. We also have a communicologist that comes out quarterly, so we have articles in there and resources and any hot topics that are going on in the state. So there's so much more that I'm missing, but those are the big, the big pieces.
I want to be an honorary Tisha member, please. So the thing we hear the most is, I don't join my state association because I don't see the value, or I don't know what they do for me. And everything you just said is so much value. I cannot wait till the end when you tell me how much this costs, because it's probably not enough. I want to focus in on that free CEU registry and those Wednesday webinars. So those are Tisha CEUs offered through those free webinars.
Yeah, so Tisha CEU, so they're free webinars on Wednesday. I think we have 10 planned for this year total. And then we also have what we call Tisha Tuesdays, so where we have webinars on Tuesday also. And that is a fee, but it's a discounted rate for Tisha members. And both of those have Tisha CEUs.
And I want to explain that too, because I can just hear people, well, why do I have to pay for the Tuesday one? I'll explain it. And then if I'm totally off base, we'll cut it out or you correct me. When you're asking for those advanced courses, you have to have really advanced people teaching them. And there's a cost to that, because SLPs, clinicians, should not be working for free all the time. We need to value our time. And these advanced practitioners and professors and business owners, their time is money. And so for Tisha to bring those people in to offer those high level advanced courses, those types of practitioners are not, they have learned to value their time, and they're not doing those things for free. And so while there's a cost involved, it sounds like a discount, probably still super cheap to get access to those, you know, high level folks who really have a lot of good information to put out there. And that's why you have to pay. It's not that Tisha wants to like make bank from this. It's literally because they have to pay the people to do those things, because otherwise you can't get them. Am I right? Is that why?
Yep, you are right.
Yeah. That's such a value though, that you're doing that. And so I want to ask this as well, because I don't think everybody understands it, and it will help me explain it and continue to educate our audience too. Do those CEUs only report to your free CE tracker, or do they also report to ASHA?
They only report to our free CEU registry. But I will tell you that they are recognized by ASHA. So when people are renewing, those are recognized.
So that's the thing. They're PDHs, professional development hours, that are still recognized and able to be used. So that's not an excuse or a reason not to engage in those or pay a little extra for those advanced courses. Not everything has to be reported to ASHA or their registry for it to count. And so this is a really amazing low cost offer, because in the cost of that membership, you're getting the CEUs, you're getting the tracker, and you're doing the things. You're bringing so much value. I'm so impressed.
That's why I think I love working with graduate students. Like, that's the future of our profession. And you know, and then being able to support people in our profession. And so that's what our association, that's our mission. And, you know, and while we're volunteers, we do have a management firm that we pay to help with the daily operations, because We're full-time speech pathologists, right. So we can't manage an association on top of that. But yeah, it is pretty neat the things that we are able to offer. And then I would even say things that, like, how do you put value to this? But I would say the networking and the connections that I've made within Tisha, like, that's how the different jobs that I've had, it's from meeting people through Tisha and as you get to know people. And so even just this last convention, I think about all the connections that were happening when I was, you know, I have students now who have private practices and I was able to connect, you know, I'm thinking of one conversations that you make that can help you professionally as well as just the field.
Those connections are important. As you said that, I was thinking about my major jobs. And I think other than even my CF, I got through a connection. Other than one or two jobs, like my very first teaching job was a blind application from looking somewhere. But most jobs that I've had, whether they be clinically or in academia, have been through networking. Mm-hmm. That is so important. And it really helps you pinpoint like good companies to work for and good teams to work with. And, you know, when you apply to something posted online, it's shot in the dark. But if you know people and you know the culture there, that really helps. Because job satisfaction is important too.
For sure.
All right. You mentioned the PAC and lobbyists. And this is a question that we have added along the way because our minds are blown with the number. So if you're comfortable, it sounds like the state does pay for at least one lobbyist or a lobbying firm. Mm-hmm. Do you know how much that costs your state every year?
So I can say that we pay 8% of our total budget goes to those advocacy efforts.
Okay, because we've heard between $12,000 and $90,000, which is a really broad range. And I think it's important for clinicians to understand how much that is, that it is a cost in making those changes at the state level, like the Interstate Compact, like Medicaid, like, you know, if you were to take on workload caps, if you don't have them or something like that, when you're dealing with the government, those lobbyists are very, very helpful, but they're also very, very expensive. And it takes money to do that.
Yeah. And I think that that's when we look at our dues, you know, our membership fees. I mean, those are things that help support that. Like I said, we're trying to work on that transparency and like the things our association's doing. And that's why we're starting this advocacy newsletter to maybe help with some of that. But it's really interesting when we hear from people who aren't members who are demanding Tisha do certain things.
Yeah.
That takes membership money and it takes membership for that.
Yeah. So let's clarify there again. We've been bringing it up a lot, but the state licensing board in mm-hmm. any state is separate
right.
from the membership association. Each of those groups have boards. The state licensing board oversees the licensure and licensure laws, and they serve the community as a whole. The membership association is exactly what it says. It is a membership association. They do not have to serve the needs of every clinician in the state. They serve the needs of their members, which then those actions do end up impacting all clinicians in the state. But if you want to have a say, you need to join, you need to volunteer, you need to get involved, and you need to be a part of it. And you can't really demand things from your state association if you're not doing those things. So that's really important to remember that they're not one and the same, and the state licensing board is different than who the association is serving.
Yeah.
But your membership association is probably actively communicating with the state board. Even though
right.
you're not one and the same, there's a lot of communication between the two about the needs of the clinicians in the state, correct?
Yes. They actually have a spot at convention where a representative sits. And so as questions come, they're right there and we're right next to each other. Sure. So, and we definitely have SLPs who have great connections with that board, and we do maintain a good relationship with them. We're separate, but we do maintain a
right.
good relationship.
So if someone were to join Tisha, what can clinicians expect as a member of the association? They're already getting these CEUs, the registry, all these things you're doing. I think we've already covered it, but is there anything
yeah.
else they can expect?
Yeah, I think I covered the really big pieces of it. And I think that we really want to hear from our members we know the big things, you know, because we experience it as well. Because we're the executive board is people from different settings, and so we know the big issues. But it does help whenever we hear from the board. You know, a few years it was like I felt like we were pulling teeth to see how we could help our members. And so it's like you have the executive board definitely is the driving force, but we need that feedback from members and want that. It's a partnership. It's not Tisha versus everyone. It's we're in the state of Texas. We're all speech language pathologists and audiologists together to make this profession the best so that we can best serve our clients. And so how do we all partner together and do that? And of course, there's going to be individual opinions or individual pieces that people, directions we need to go. And that's the executive board pulling the feedback that we're getting and then making that decision of what the next step is.
So once people join and once you receive that type of feedback, how do you handle that? Once it's received, what do you do with it?
So we have our management firm, we call them our state office. There's a phone number on our Tisha website that you can call. And then there's also an email address, which is staff@txsha.org. And you can send an email into them. So they take everything in and then they pass it along to the executive board. So these are the requests that we've been receiving. This is the information that we've been receiving. This is what's been happening pretty much. Like right around convention time, they have to bring in another staff member to help with the phones because everyone's getting ready for convention. And so the call volume is really high. So they bring in additional help to help manage that. They alert us of those things of, hey, this is what's going on, or these are the things that people are saying. A lot of times they forward us emails and they'll say, like, who should we connect them with? Or here's this, which committee do we get them in touch with? And then our chairs, our committee members, you know, will be able to respond. So that's
right.
The process.
Now we don't have a staff at Fix SLP, but I need that extra staff person to answer our hundreds of emails. I just need that one person. But it's good that they're doing that too. Mm-hmm. Your association dollars are also paying for the staff to answer your call when you call them. They're responding to needs of the members,
right.
And that's amazing.
Right.
Okay, so if we have not fully convinced the clinicians in Texas to join Tisha, I don't know why we've wasted the last 40 minutes. There's nothing more we can say to convince people. So now that they're all convinced, where do they go to join Tisha?
They can go to our website, which is txsha.org. And on our website, there's a membership tab. And so you can click to join today. We also have an FAQ sheet up there about membership renewal. You can join as an active member, as an associate member, SLP assistant. You could be an affiliate of our association. We also have a low-cost student membership because, as I mentioned earlier, we feel really strongly about involving students. We actually have two graduate student representatives who sit on our executive board. So we do an application process and then select graduate students, and they're not voting members, but it's awesome to have them on the board as they give lots of input and ways that we can connect with students. And if you ever make it to Texas and make it to our convention, we have an awesome Praxis Bowl. So we just had 15 teams in that. We have a lot of universities in the state of Texas. It is like a loud, really enthusiastic event where the schools are competing against each other. It's a lot of fun. So we have those different categories. So to be an active member, it's $130.
Which is nothing. I mean, that's so affordable for all the things that you have laid out in the last 40 minutes.
I know that a lot of state associations are feeling this right now, but we're definitely feeling the budget crunch. So I can tell you that since 2019, we actually haven't made any revenue. And you probably are wondering, well, how are you still functioning as an association without that? And we had a really strong group of leaders before me who have invested in reserves. And so that has been keeping us afloat. So we actually, my two years of president, we're anticipating a budget loss of $150,000 from 2023. And then we did approve another deficit budget for 2024. So while it's nice that we have those reserves that have kept us afloat, those won't be there forever. And so I think that it's important for people to understand that and understand that the things cost money. Those things that we talked about earlier, I mean, just the Tisha CE registry, like that's a platform that costs money to the association to have that. I just think that it's important to understand that. And I will tell you, we have been very diligent about our budgeting and cutting expenses. And what are the things, you know, we want our members to absolutely have? We've had lots of people who have said, I'll do a free presentation to help. And so lots of people who have done this, I just want to commend our executive board the past few years, because it's been really hard to navigate as an association. That's the membership cost. And
that's,
you know, we're hopeful
I'll be the affiliate. I mean, I'm like joining associations left and right here. I do not need to join Tisha. I need to stay focused on my state. But yeah, that's an amazing value for what you're charging. So you mentioned earlier, you're getting the word out on socials is important so people know. So what platforms are you guys on and where can people find you on social media?
We are on Instagram. It's TSHA. We are also on Facebook. And then our website has a lot of resources and materials as well.
Did we cover everything? Is there anything else that you want to say that we didn't get to or that you have on your notes?
I think that's it.
Robin, this was so good. Thank you for doing this with us today. So everybody, first, before you turn this off, go rate and review 5 stars. If you love what we're doing, we need some sustaining partners so we can keep doing this. All we're asking for is $5 a month. You can find that info at fixslp.com. And now turn off this recording. Go join Tisha. Go write to your state representatives. Go fix it. Okay? Thanks, Robin.
Thank you.
We'll see everybody next time.